Well, good evening for everyone. Hopefully I got to see most of you this morning. If I didn't get to introduce myself to you, my name is Josh Marshall, and it's great to be out preaching with you and visiting with you. And tonight, I want to take just an overview of one of the books of the Bible. What inspired this particular series that I had made was the idea that when we're sitting in typically our Wednesday night Bible study, we might spend weeks covering a particular book, and we dive deep for those nuggets of wisdom in there, as we should dive deep and study into the Bible. But I often equate it to putting together a puzzle. When you are putting together a jigsaw puzzle, especially one with many, many pieces, you get to see how all the little pieces interlock, and that's like studying the verses piece by piece. But oftentimes, when you're so focused on that, you can't see what the big picture is unless you take a step back for a moment and you see what the entire thing as a whole is trying to communicate to you. And so sometimes I find it to be valuable to take a step back and look at a book, not as individual verses, but as themes and concepts as a whole, to see what the whole message of the book is about. And so I started a series where I was doing that. And I actually dove in, not at Genesis, as you might think, but I dove in on some of the less popular books, so to speak, on the books that we often pass over because they're dry or they're boring, things like Leviticus or Deuteronomy, which is what we're going to look at here tonight, as opposed to looking at books like Genesis or Psalms or Isaiah that we often go to. I feel that those books of the Bible shouldn't be neglected just because we don't understand them. If anything, that should be where we want to turn to first. Because if we don't understand something in the Bible, that's certainly where we want to go and shore up our knowledge. And so that's what I would like to do with you tonight, is to look at the book of Deuteronomy as a whole. So the book of Deuteronomy begins by giving us a little bit of a story up until this point. The book of Deuteronomy is the fifth book in the Bible, and it's the final book of the Torah. The Torah was the first five books of the Bible for the Jewish people. And so, after the Exodus from Egypt, Israel was at Mount Sinai for 1 year, entering into a covenant with their God. And they had a disastrous road trip through the wilderness, and the Exodus generation disqualified themselves from entering into the land of promise to Abraham. And so this is where Deuteronomy begins, is with Moses standing in front of this new generation explaining the Torah, and it's from here that we get to see the larger design and the purpose of the book of Deuteronomy. It starts out with Moses explaining the Torah, and then it moves into a series of speeches by Moses and a call to covenant faithfulness with their God. At the center of the book is a collection of laws. And these are the terms of the covenant between God and Israel. So in chapters 12 to 26, we have this collection of laws. Some of these laws are new, but many are actually repeated from the laws that were given earlier at Mount Sinai. And that's actually where this book gets its name, from the Greek word Deuteronomium. It's a hard word to say for an English speaker, but it means a second law. Now, surrounding these laws in the middle are two outer sections of Moses' speech. And each of those are actually broken up into two parts themselves. So we have Moses' opening speech in chapters 1 to 11, and then Moses' closing speech, and then his death in chapters 27 to 34. So let's go ahead and just dive into those. So first of all, Moses, like I said, he summarizes the story so far, and he highlights how the rebellious previous generation was in contrast with God's constant grace and provision in the wilderness. And God did bring his justice on them, yes, but he didn't abandon his covenant promises. Now, after this comes a series of very passionate sermons where Moses calls this new generation to be more faithful than their parents were to the covenant. He reminds them of the Ten Commandments, And then the centerpiece of this section is this famous line called the Shema. Moses says, "Listen, Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." This should sound very familiar to you. If you read in Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, or Mark chapter 12, 29 to 30, or Luke 10, verse 27, they say very similar things. As a matter of fact, let's go ahead and look at the first one there. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37. I'm sure most of you have this verse memorized, but just in case you don't, it says, "And he said to him, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind.'" Jesus even goes on to say, "This is the great and foremost commandment." So something that we see in the Old Testament carried forward into the New Testament. Now this Shema, it became a very important daily prayer in Judaism, and it brings all the themes of the book of Deuteronomy together. So the word listen, or Shema in Hebrew, it means much more than just to hear. Its meaning includes responding to what you hear, or in English, we would say to obey. And the word love in Hebrew also means much more than just an emotion or a feeling. It's a decision of wholehearted devotion to God that involves your will, your emotions, your mind, and your heart. Now for Israel, their obedience and their devotion to God served an even larger purpose. Obedience to the laws is what's going to make Israel a unique people among the nations. Just like God said at Mount Sinai, they'll become a kingdom of priests. And Moses now says how. Israel has the chance, by following the laws, to show the whole world the wisdom and the justice of God. The other key idea in the Shema is that Israel was called to obey and be devoted to the Lord alone. Or literally, in Hebrew, it says, "The Lord is one." In context, the point is that the Lord is the one God Israel is to worship and obey. Israel's about to go into the land of Canaan, and there they worship different aspects of creation, the sun, the weather, or sex, or war. And in Moses' view, worshiping these other gods degrades humans, and it destroys communities. But worshiping the God of Israel, who's the creator and the redeemer, that will lead to life and blessing. And so we reach the middle of Deuteronomy, and we come to this large collection of laws at the center of the book. And they're roughly arranged by topic so that the opening section is about Israel's worship to their God. They were to have one central temple where one God would be worshipped, and also God was to be worshipped in Israel's care for its poor. So for example, all Israelites were to set aside 1/10 of their annual income to be given to the temple, but another 1/10 was to be set aside every 3 years and given to the poor. These are the kinds of laws that put Israel on the cutting edge of justice in comparison with their ancient neighbors. It was all bound up with their worship of God. The next section outlines the character qualities of Israel's leaders. So the elders, the priests, the kings, these were all placed under the authority of the covenant laws, which God said that he would enforce by sending prophets to keep the leaders accountable. So in contrast to Israel's neighbors, where kings were thought as divine and a law unto themselves, Israel's leaders were subordinate to the law and to the prophets. Following this section is a large section about laws of Israel's civil life. So rules about marriage, family, business, and also about social justice, about their legal system and how it was to protect widows and orphans and immigrants. And then these are concluded by more laws about worship. Now, here's some tips for reading all of these laws. First of all, remember, these are all terms of the Sinai covenant given specifically to ancient Israel living in a culture that's very different from yours. And so, two, it's not going to be helpful to compare these laws with modern laws from a very different culture. Rather, these were given to set Israel apart. And so we need to compare Israel's laws with those of their neighbors, like Assyria or Babylon. And so if you have the time, I would encourage you to look into history and look up things like the Code of Ur-Nammu, Middle Assyrian laws, or the Code of Hammurabi. And when you do that, all of a sudden, laws that seemed harsh or maybe just bizarre become much more clear. You see that God is pushing Israel to a higher level of justice than was ever known before. And so, finally, try to discern what core principles of wisdom or justice underlie any particular law, and you'll discover some really profound things. This is what Paul does in his first letter to the Corinthians in chapter 9, verse 9. And he quotes a law from Deuteronomy, chapter 5, verse 4. Turn over there, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in verses 9 to 10. Paul says, "For it is written in the law of Moses, 'You shall not muzzle the ox while it is threshing.' God is not concerned about the oxen, is he? Or is he speaking entirely for our sake? Yes, it is written for our sake, because the plowman ought to plow in hope, and the thresher to thresh in hope of sharing in the crops. In those days, grain was broken away from the husk by having an ox tread over it repeatedly. And it was cruel to force an ox to walk over all that food, but muzzle him so he couldn't eat any of it." Paul was explaining that those who ministered should have a hope of being supported. And so Paul is using this idea of looking at the underlying core principle of a law and how it applied. And so back to Moses. After Moses goes through all the laws, he issues this final challenge to Israel that they should listen to and love their God. First, he issues a warning and an ultimatum. If Israel listens to and obeys their God, everything is going to go great. Lots of divine blessings. But if they don't listen and they rebel, famine, plague, devastation, and ultimately exile from the land. And then Moses forces a decision. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 15 to 20, he says, "Today I set before you all life or death, blessing or curse, goodness or evil. So choose life by loving the Lord your God and listening to him." But then Moses, he says, "I know that after I die, you're going to rebel and you're going to turn away from God and end up in exile," which is kind of a downer. But then again, he's been with these people for decades, and it's become clear that his hopes for them are not very high. But all isn't lost, because Moses says that one day, when Israel is sitting in exile, at any point, Moses says that they can turn back to their God, who will, in his words, "circumcise your heart so that you may love him with all your heart and soul and live." And this is a vivid metaphor saying that there's something fundamentally wrong with Israel's heart. It's stubborn and it's hard, and it's the same thing that's wrong with the heart of all of humanity. This goes all the way back to the rebellion in the garden. Humans seized autonomy from God. They wanted to define good and evil for themselves. And they ruined God's good world as a result. But one day, Moses says, God is going to do something. Something to transform the hearts of his people so they can truly listen and love God from the heart and be led back to true life. This is the promise that gets picked up and repeated by later biblical prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel, the hope for a new heart. So Moses ends his speech with a poem of warning, and then a blessing, and then he walks up onto a mountain, and that's where he dies. And that's where Deuteronomy comes to a close. All of the major plot tensions of the biblical story are in place, but they're left totally unresolved. So this descendant of woman who's going to come and defeat evil, when's that going to happen? Or how is God going to rescue the whole world and bless all nations through this family? And how can God's holiness be reconciled with a people that are continuously rebellious? How is God going to transform the hearts of his people? Deuteronomy leaves you with these cliffhangers and leaves you with no choice but to keep reading to find out the answers in later books. But that being said, that's all the Old Testament, right? So what does that have to do with us under the New Testament? For us modern day Christians, what do we get from the book of Deuteronomy? Well, the book for us is a reminder of God's word. In many ways, it's like a mirror. You see, we see these reflections for the Old Testament and the New Testament. Moses' opening speech was reminding Israel what God had done for them. And looking back into the Bible and looking back into Deuteronomy, we're really reminded of what God has done for us. The middle of Deuteronomy is a collection of laws. Laws set standards and expectations for God's people. It also gives us an insight into God's character and what God can expect from us, that he requires our full devotion, our love, our obedience with our heart, our mind, our soul. And it's also a call to covenant faithfulness. And we're called to be faithful today as well. In John chapter 1 and verse 17, it says, "For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth were realized through Jesus Christ." Deuteronomy is a mirror for us. Although its words were originally penned for those of the nation of Israel, we know that the promise of salvation was extended to everyone, that those who follow after the faith of Abraham are God's people. And so that applies to us as well. And so the same messages that Moses encouraged the people of Israel to take to heart are the same ones that we should be taking to heart. One of the most important verses that I highlighted was that of the Shema, to love the Lord your God with your whole self. That's repeated in the Gospels in Matthew chapter 22. That sums up the entire book of Deuteronomy. And that's what I hope you take to heart as we close here this morning or this evening. Now, that being said, there are times when we don't obey God with our full heart. Sometimes we don't obey God with a fraction of our heart or our heart at all. We don't obey God with everything that we have in us. When that happens, we fall to the wayside, we stumble, we make mistakes, we fall into sin. We have a time of invitation so that we can make those things right when we need to. We can reach out for prayers and encouragement from our brothers and sisters. You know, it might be nice for my vanity to think that you all show up here to listen to me speak, but I know that's not the case. We show up here not just to worship God, but to edify one another. We show up here so that we can turn to each other. Each one of us is frail and fragile, and we break, and we're broken creatures. And we need the reliance of each and every one of our brethren to get by. And again, that's why we have this time of invitation. So if there's something that you're struggling with and you need the encouragement of the brethren here, let it be known while together, while we stand and sing.